getting a view into the locker room that you don't normally see.
A sanitized view.
Not a natural scorer.
The honest opinion, he's not doing the job that they hired him to do.
I just disagree.
Accelerating your hockey learning curve. This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. TSN1290.ca.
And the Feds are after it. Malkin trying to chase it down the far corner to the right point over to Lovejoy. Waits, shooting around the boards for Rusty. Goes in on Vasilevsky. Rust got a stick on it and went on Vasilevsky on the post. And he's going to get credit for the goal and get his second. The Penguins lead 2-1. Oh, scratch my back with a hacksaw.
There you have it. Mike Lang, Pittsburgh Penguins radio play-by-play man, calling one of two goals for Brandon Rust in the Eastern Conference final, which saw the Pittsburgh Penguins defeat the Tampa Bay Lightning 4-3 in that series and head to the Stanley Cup final, which starts on Monday in Pittsburgh, San Jose against the Penguins. You're listening to the Illegal Curve radio show on TSN 1290. Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg. Drew Mindell's out of town this week, so it'll be the two of us and Rory McGoran carrying you through the next 3 hours. We will talk a lot about the Stanley Cup finals coming up, again, as I said, starting on Monday. But we got a lot of other stuff to talk about, Ezzy. We have a bunch of guests today. Ed Willies of the Vancouver Province is going to join us, talk about the Eric Gudbrandsson, Jared McCann trade with draft picks from the Vancouver perspective, excuse me. We have George Richards on from the Miami Herald to talk about that trade from the Florida perspective. We have Curtis Pashelka coming on from the San Jose Mercury News to preview the final from the San Jose perspective. And boy, was that a celebration this week in San Jose. And the big news, and we'll start this segment talking about it, is Pascal Vincent being named head coach of the Manitoba Moose. Yesterday was the press conference. We're going to talk about that now. And Pascal will join us live at 10 o'clock.
Morning, yeah, and Richie, Andy. There certainly was a lot of news in addition to the Stanley Cup final. And, you know, in my opinion, the Stanley Cup final is going to be exciting, and there are a lot of storylines. And I'm the type of person that's, as you know, is going to watch the Stanley Cup final, regardless of which teams are in the Stanley Cup final. But you have Joe Thornton, Patrick Marleau, who have been in the NHL almost 20 years, looking for their first Stanley Cup. They've certainly been in many playoffs. And then you have Sidney Crosby, Evgeny Malkin, going for their second Stanley Cup. So I think it's going to be an entertaining Stanley Cup. And you mentioned Pascal Vincent being named head coach of the Manitoba Moose. And I know that he was criticized quite a bit this year for the Jets' power play and the special teams. But I think it's a good hire. And I know that the Moose are in a rebuilding phase right now. And last year they had so many young players, I don't think many people expected them to do good. And that's not to say that Keith McCambridge should have been let go, because I think Keith McCambridge is an excellent coach as well. But I think that to stay within the organization in this particular case was probably the best decision. And sure, there were other candidates out there that probably could have done an excellent job as well. But I think in this particular case, it works. What was interesting to me is the Jets haven't named a replacement assistant coach for Pascal Vincent. So I would expect that to come out in the next couple of weeks, probably before the draft.
And people are wondering if that assistant coach is going to be somebody Paul Maurice's close relationship with in the past. That's a possibility. They also haven't, Pascal Vincent hasn't, you know, named his coaching staff just yet and who that'll be. So there are questions on both ends there. I think it's interesting that the team stays internal here. I don't think it's shocking by any means, but I think it's interesting. You know, you're going to keep it in-house. You know, we'll ask Pascal Vincent, you know, how similar will the systems be from one team to the other. He alluded to it yesterday at the press conference, and we're going to play a clip on that in a second, about how, you know, his job is to develop players for the Winnipeg Jets. And the AHL is an interesting league that way because, you know, if you remember the Moose the first time around, you know, their job was to develop players for the Vancouver Canucks, but also to win. And this team seems to be less concerned with winning and more concerned with development, and understandably so in the sense that they own the NHL club. So they have a vested interest in making that team better, whereas Vancouver Canucks before, you had to balance being competitive in this city, having followed NHL hockey with the AHL, and also developing the Vancouver Canucks. Let's listen to the clip from Pascal Vincent yesterday and then talk about it after we hear it.
Well, I think the last 5 years prepared me for this job. When you've been a head coach for so long and you move to the next level, you gain knowledge And again, I was interested in that job because it's the Moose. I wasn't looking for to go anywhere else. When this job got open, I showed some interest because it's the Moose and because it's in Winnipeg. And to be working with NHL players, to be working with professionals, and to know and to realize the maturity level you need to have on a daily basis to succeed and to see those guys work the way they work and go through the ups and downs, the good days and the tougher days. And I think I the 5 years of being here in the NHL prepared me well to coach at the American League level. And you combine this with my experience at the junior level and the communication, it's different coaching a 27 or 20-year-old. And it's I think I've prepared myself properly. I've worked hard, yes. I've been surrounded by great people as well. There's only one goal, and it's for the Winnipeg Jets to win hockey games. And I'm going to try to help them in a different manner. We're going to develop the players. We're going to put them in an environment where they can grow, they can understand what is expected. We have a clear vision as an organization is what it takes to be a Winnipeg Jet. And we're going to share that information with the players. I feel good about this opportunity, and I feel we're going to do great things.
That was Pascal Vincent in yesterday's press conference after being named head coach of the Manitoba Moose. Ezzy, I find it a little bit interesting the comment, and we talked about it before we heard the clip. The Winnipeg Jets, you know, his goal is to make sure the Winnipeg Jets are as good as they possibly can be. When you're judging an AHL coach, and it's really hard to do it from the outside, but you're judging an AHL coach on the results of, I guess, the NHL team or the development for the NHL team. I mean, last year, Keith McCambridge, the team on the ice, first of all, he wasn't given a very good team. So it was no surprise that they were as bad as they were, but I don't think if you talk to somebody who had an intimate knowledge of the AHL would have been considered a playoff team, certainly on paper not. But a lot of the guys who went up to the AHL last year, you know, for the Jets, you know, Kosmacheks and certain guys who went up, some of them, Patan at times, they seem to be improved from earlier in the year, and part of that's probably just due to youth and getting experience in the pro game. But if you're judging the coaches based on that, I'm not sure you could say McCambridge did a poor job last year. So it's interesting going forward. If you're looking at it from the Winnipeg Jets perspective, then do the results in the AHL matter, or is it just developing the players that you're given? And if that's the case, you know, how much control do you have over that? I mean, you have some for sure, but as I just alluded to, you also have young players playing in pro who are generally going to improve with more seasoning.
And Richie, I don't think that developing young players and winning in the AHL are exclusive, by the way.
Fair enough.
I think you always have to be trying to win games and improve your own team, regardless of which players are there. And in the AHL, because it is a feeder league, it's a developmental league, you're constantly having players going from the AHL up to the NHL and from the ECHL up to the AHL, mm-hmm. and you have players that are on pro contracts. Towards the end of the season, the Manitoba Moose team was completely different than the team at the beginning of the season. Some AHL teams have a little bit more consistency, teams that have more veteran players and stuff like that. I mean, look at teams like the Hershey Bears year after year seem to be really good. So Pascal Vincent, as the head coach of the Manitoba Moose and as a head coach with the Winnipeg Jets, I think, you know, we talked about it before we played the clip. Pascal Vincent, I think, took a lot of criticism for the special teams, and rightly so. I mean, the special teams have not improved from year one of the Winnipeg Jets to year five. I also think that that has a lot to do with personnel. Mm-hmm. I think some of it has to do with not getting bounces, stuff like that. I don't think it falls all on Pascal Vincent's shoulders. I think Paul Maurice has to take some of the credit, or lack of credit, I guess, in this case. But when you're talking about Pascal Vincent and what he wants to accomplish, I think when he knows the system, and he talked about it in the clip, he has this familiarity, and that's probably one of the reasons why Chevy and Zinger decided to go with Pascal Vincent in-house as opposed to bringing in someone else like a Nolan Baumgartner, who was one of the guys that was rumored, mm-hmm. or other among other guys. There were a lot of candidates, Richie. This Moose job was very appealing for many of the reasons that you just spoke about. All of the young players in the system, and with the Jets getting the second overall pick and having Kyle Connor coming into the NHL this coming season, you're going to see a lot of good players that are going to fall down to the Moose. So you're talking about guys like Nick Petan. Maybe Marco Dano spend some time in the AHL. Maybe Joel Armia spend some time in the AHL. Connor Hellebuck, we know, is going to be a starting goalie with the Jets this year. And, you know, that's something to mention as well. Keith McCambridge didn't have Connor Hellebuck for most of the season. Earlier in the season, he had Connor Hellebuck. This team wasn't going to be good anyway, Rich. The Jets and the Moose both weren't good teams this past season.
Well, I mean, the Jets was an unexpected to be how bad as they were. The Moose were expected to be a poor team. Yeah.
Right, with the amount of young players. And I actually think, Rich, Pascal Vincent is a good hiring because he's a young coach for a young team. And this team is going to be young for a long time, especially considering that a lot of the Jets' top prospects are already going right to the NHL. They're getting fast-tracked, right?
For sure.
So I think that, you know, he's proven that he... I mean, you talk to people around the Jets, and he's known as a very good communicator, astute guy, student of the game. And for all of the, you know, the criticism that he takes for not having a good power play, you look at guys like Mark Scheifele and Nikolai Ehlers, Andrew Kopp, the way he's progressed. I mean, Pascal Vincent was responsible for the forwards, more so. Charlie Huddy takes care of the defense. I mean, they don't just work exclusively, but right. as far as in-game, they're working with forwards and all of that. And you look at how a guy like Mark Scheifele's developed with Pascal Vincent as an assistant coach, and he's worked very closely with a guy like Mark Scheifele, among other young players, right? So I think his experience in the QMJHL, he was a very young coach when he started in the QMJHL. I think he's the right guy here. And it remains to be seen how good the Manitoba Moose do this year, because it's going to be another young team. But I think, you know, in this particular case...
I don't think that's
case,
the goal anyways.
No.
Like, I don't think that's the ultimate goal is to win with that team.
No, they're going to win the Calder Cup.
It's a luxury if they make the playoffs and if they succeed. And depth up front, as you just alluded to, depth up top on the NHL Jets will certainly help with the Moose. Do you think this is... I mean, I think this question has to be asked. I thought during the middle of the season, near the end of the season, that the Jets would make a change on the assistant coach. I thought that you would see a change, if not two. Because of the special teams having struggled consistently for, you know, really since 2011. I didn't think it would come about in this fashion. Do you think that has something to do with it? Is this a reassigning? I mean, take away the titles for a second. Do you think this is a reassigning?
That's a good question. I don't know the answer to that, Richie. And, you know, Pascal Vincent said that he applied for the job when he heard that it was opening. But certainly when you look at the lack of progression in special teams, special teams can be a big part of the game. I mean, if you're an excellent team, if you're the Chicago Blackhawks, your special teams don't need to carry you. But when you're a middling team like the Winnipeg Jets were this year, mm-hmm. a non-playoff team, the special teams really hurt them, especially considering the Jets took the most penalties in the NHL, or they were second most penalties in the NHL, whatever it was at the end of the season. Special teams weren't good, but I think that in this particular case, even if it was a reassigning, that could turn out to be a positive thing. I do think that the Jets need a fresh voice in there. You look at, you know, a team like San Jose brought in Bob Bugner and Steve Spott on the coaching staff after Larry Robinson wasn't able to be on the bench anymore. I think by bringing in new voices sometimes can really help. And in a situation like the Jets, where they've had the same assistant coaches for 5 years, minus Perry Pern, this could be a good thing. So I'm not sure if it was a reassigning. You know, there's nothing to indicate it was a reassigning. Maybe it was.
I mean, it wouldn't tell you if it was.
Exactly.
Right.
But in this particular case, I think it will work. I think you have a familiar face in the dressing room and someone who knows the system. And it remains to be seen how the Moose do. But his track record with developing young players dating back to the QMJHL is certainly good.
We'll leave it there. We're going to have Pascal Vincent on at the top of the next hour, 10 a.m. Pascal Vincent will join us on the show to talk about being the new head coach of the Manitoba Moose. Next segment, though, we're going to break down the Sharks and the Penguins. Stanley Cup final starts game one on Monday. A problem here. A voice just don't sound right. But
listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Drew, Ezra, and Richard return on TSN 1290. TSN1290.ca.
All the boards by Ward, and then across for Couture. The turn with the shot, Ward, he scores! Second of the game for Joel Ward, 3-0 Sharks.
Sharks made a few changes this offseason, one of which was the addition of Joel Ward. Boy, did that pay dividends in the playoffs, and really all season long. Richard Pollock, Ezra Ginsberg here on the Illegal Curve Radio Show. Rory McGoran did a great job behind the scenes there. And, you know, Ezzy, Sharks, Penguins, first of all.
If you picked the Sharks and the Penguins at the beginning of this season, please call into the station right now and let us know, because you are a lot smarter than Richie, Rory, or I, even though Rory did very well in a recent Seinfeld trivia contest.
Yes, but let's get into that for a second. Rory, you have your mic on. Before we get into the Sharks, Penguins, I mean, the series is going to be interesting, but not that interesting. You did a Seinfeld trivia this week.
Yep.
And you finished.
Yeah. Good. I'm a good finish with a second place effort.
It's pretty good.
Yeah. Me and my two brothers, we went in there.
Pretty good.
So we were talking off air about the trivia questions that you were facing. And Ezzy and I have watched our fair share of 10 million Seinfeld episodes. Yeah. And we still were getting most of the questions wrong.
Yeah. They started off with 10 questions there that I guess the group that showed up for the event, they didn't expect that much knowledge with all the people there. But yeah, there's about 22 teams, and after the first 10 questions, I think like 14 of them had 10 out of 10, so they had to kind of regroup and think of some harder questions for the next couple rounds.
Like, for our listeners, like, what was an easy question?
An easy question? Oh, God.
Putting you on the spot here.
Oh, that's okay. It would have been like, what was the brand of golf ball that Kramer hit into the whale in The Marine Biologist?
Right. Yeah. The hole-in-one. Titleist.
Yeah, which is a Titleist, yeah.
That's neat. Out of all the questions you asked me, that's only one of the only ones I got. But, I mean, you had some, there's some hard questions.
Yeah, they stepped it up a bit with, like, what was the name of Jerry's gym teacher, which, I mean, it's only referenced once. And or what was Jerry's full legal address, and you had to have everything.
And which for our listeners, why don't you tell it? Rory knows the Jerry's full legal address.
It's 129 West 81st Street, Apartment 5A. But
that's unreal.
Yeah.
Anyhow, good job.
Well, thank you.
Good
job. It got us $25 worth of beers at the end for second place. So
nothing wrong with that.
It's all fun.
So I mean, if you finish second place in the Stanley Cup Final, Izzy, you get more. You don't get $25. But
I also like the team name that Rory was proposing, that they select Moops.
The Moops, yeah. That's Mumps. Anyhow, Sharks Penguins starts on Monday, as we mentioned, Ezzy, and you know, you get into the Cup Final. It's an odd schedule, a bunch of 3-day breaks, and I guess my only thought on that is you have so much travel here between these two teams that the longer breaks will probably lead to better quality hockey.
You kept making all the stops.
I'm just gonna do Seinfeld references the whole segment. This is a hard series to handicap, I think.
Yes.
If you look at the Pittsburgh Penguins, probably the second best team in the Eastern Conference coming into the playoffs. So, I mean, for them to get through Washington surprised me, but if you looked at them at the... And I said, you know, Drew asked earlier in the season how many rounds I think the Penguins could go. I thought they could go 2 to get to the third round. So, going through Washington surprised me, and beating Tampa didn't surprise me as much, that was a difficult series. So the Penguins come in there. The interesting thing to me about the Penguins is how different, if you watch this team play at the middle of the season, first of all, for Mike Johnson, and then you watch them play even in later on getting adjusted to Mike Sullivan, you can't tell me after, if you watch the Pittsburgh Penguins all season long, you cannot tell me coaching doesn't matter. You cannot tell me coaching is overrated.
When Mike Sullivan, you're right, Rich, and when Mike Sullivan took over from Mike Johnston, it was night and day. We talked about it a few months ago.
Mm-hmm.
Pittsburgh, as you mentioned, coming into the playoffs was arguably the hottest team in the NHL, not just record-wise, but the way they were playing. Mm-hmm. And I agree with you. I think aside from the Washington Capitals, they were the most dangerous team heading into the playoffs. I think all of us here, I know Richie, you and I picked the Pittsburgh Penguins to win the first round, but neither of us picked the Pittsburgh Penguins to beat the Washington Capitals.
That's
and
right.
Why was that? It was depth. But the Pittsburgh Penguins have proven that they have the depth. And the fact that the Pittsburgh Penguins were able to get into the Stanley Cup Finals, win Game 7 without Trevor Daley, one of their top defensemen, and at the beginning of the season, he wasn't even a member of the Pittsburgh Penguins, but he became a top pairing defenseman for them. But a guy like Brian Dumoulin steps up to the top pair with Chris Letang, did an excellent job. Ollie Matta comes back after being a healthy scratch, played pretty well, I thought. He wasn't anything special, but the key to me, Rich, and you know, I was talking to our friend Hart, who's a big Pittsburgh Penguins fan. To me, if you're looking for a Conn Smythe candidate, and there's a few, I mean, Phil Kessel, Sidney Crosby, for me, it's been Chris Letang. And we talk about this every year. Teams that get to the Stanley Cup Finals have a defenseman that has the ability to quarterback the power play, take over a game, play 30 minutes a night.
Brent Burns, Chris Letang.
Past four Stanley Cup winners, Drew Doughty, Duncan Keith, right? Mm-hmm. And then you have Jake Muzzin and Brent Seabrook as the number two defenseman. Who's number two defenseman for San Jose? Mark-Edward Vlasic, who was just named to Team Canada's World Cup roster. So I think the San Jose Sharks and Pittsburgh Penguins' depth has really surprised a lot of people. Mm-hmm. San Jose was one of the best offensive teams in the Western Conference during the regular season. I think they were third best overall in the NHL, if I'm not mistaken. So it's no surprise that guys like Joe Pavelski, Logan Couture, Patrick Marleau, Brent Burns, those guys are putting up numbers. But what's the most surprising to me is how well they've played defensively. We just talked about it. Burns, Vlasic, Justin Braun, we've talked about it, Rich. I know you're a big fan of Justin Braun.
I like Justin Braun, yeah.
He's done an excellent job. You look at the guys they've shut down, you know, whether it's Tyler Toffoli on LA, whether it's Philip Forsberg on Nashville, and you look at Tarasenko. What did Tarasenko do? Nothing up until 8 minutes left in Game 7, scored two goals, right? So
yeah, what was that all about?
Well, I think Tarasenko
completely
was,
invisible
was persona
series.
Non grata in the Stanley Cup, pardon me, the Western Conference Finals. You know, it's
just get in there for a second, Izzy. This is the guy who was absolutely unstoppable in the first round against the Chicago Blackhawks.
Unstoppable, 40-goal scorer, signed an 8-year contract before the season. I mean,
Elliot Friedman's saying that the Blues aren't happy with him right now.
I wouldn't be happy with the way he played. Your top player not getting any goals until the last period of Game 7 is not acceptable, right?
Yeah, when it's already over.
And, you know, other players had to step up, you know, in his absence. But there's an axiom every year. Your top players have to be your top players. And Sidney Crosby, 3 goals, 2 game winners in the Eastern Conference Final.
That was a beauty in Game 6, eh?
He stepped up his game. Oh. Evgeny Malkin stepped up his game. And then over on the other side, you have Thornton, Hurdle, and Pavelski, who were basically unstoppable.
So let's talk about that, okay? So Thornton, Hurdle, and Pavelski. Let's talk matchups. These teams are similar in many ways, in that, but do have their differences. Thornton, Pavelski, Hurdle.
Yep.
They're going to go up. That's that first line. If you're Pittsburgh, you have home ice advantage. You have last change on Monday night and on, I believe, Wednesday is the second game. Do you go? I mean, in reality, you have 3 lines that are scoring. Who do you put up against the Thornton line? Well, is it Malkin? Is it Bonino? Or is it Crosby?
It's a good question. And
because to stop this line, in my opinion, you need to be attacking.
Yes. And when it comes to Pittsburgh, Pittsburgh's a little bit different than San Jose. San Jose has 3 good scoring lines. So does Pittsburgh. But San Jose has a more of a dominant first line.
Yes.
So as far as San Jose is concerned, do you put Burns and Martin up against the Crosby line, or do you put Burns and Martin against the Bonino line, right, which has really been their best scoring line? So to answer your question, though, Rich, I think when you're talking about the Thornton-Pavelski-Hurdle line, I think you're matching up top line against top line. And in this case, top line would be the Crosby line. And I think then you're attacking. But
if Crosby cancels out Thornton, I think that Pittsburgh wins the series.
Right. But to answer your question, though, Bonino, Hagelin, and Kessel, the HBK line, shout out to Shawn Michaels, is one of the fastest lines I think we've ever seen in the NHL.
Well, let's talk about speed. Because I think the series is a toss-up. I think that the Sharks have better defensive depth.
Flip a coin.
Better talent. They have less offensive depth. I think the goaltending could go either way. But I do think it's an interesting... I think it's interesting that the Sharks have taken advantage of two teams. If you watch these series, of the 3 series they've played, I thought they took advantage of LA's lack of speed, and they took advantage of St. Louis's lack of speed.
That's a good point.
That will not be an advantage in this series.
No. Nope.
These are two exceptionally fast teams. So if you cancel out that advantage, I think the Sharks have a little bit more trouble. Having said that, the Sharks 1-6D has never been this good. And the Penguins' top 3 lines, no disrespect to the 4th line, but I mean, Matt Cullen's been a great contributor. They've been very difficult to stop, and depending on the night. So you know, if you are, if you're Pittsburgh Penguins, I mean, if you're Mike Sullivan, you want to take advantage of the third pairing of San Jose, which is a, you know, a good hardworking pairing, but you'd like to get a good speed line out, maybe your Bonino line out against that line.
Roman Polak, Brendan Dillon.
Try and pressure Polak and Dillon skating wise.
Right.
And having said that, I mean, if you're San Jose, you want Couture against the second pairing of Pittsburgh, and the third, there's holes there. So I think you're going to see a couple of high scoring games in this series.
Yes, I think you will as well, Rich. And you know, we say flip a coin in this series. First of all, we were talking about this off air. Both of us went 6-2 in the first round, which is not an easy feat to do in today's age of parity, right?
Mm-hmm.
But when you talk about the Eastern Conference Finals and the Western Conference Finals, I had St. Louis and Tampa going to the finals, but Pittsburgh and San Jose, you look at the way they've got here, and San Jose winning series in five games mm-hmm. against L.A., a favorite to win the Stanley Cup this year, I'm not surprised that San Jose and Pittsburgh are in the Stanley Cup Finals. These teams are very well coached, and you got to give Pete DeBoer a lot of credit. He's in the second Stanley Cup Final here, and you got to give him credit for the moves he's made. You know, bringing in a guy like Zubris, who wasn't playing earlier, and now he's, you know, had a nice role on the fourth line there with Spalling and Wingles. But I agree with you. I mean, you have so many dangerous scores. You have Kessel and Pavelski leading the way, but really it's Thornton and Crosby that are setting everything up. And then you have a great supporting cast, as you mentioned, San Jose, Couture and Ward, and Pittsburgh, Bonino, and you've got Brian Rust, who's seemingly come out of nowhere from Wilkes-Barre of the AHL to now be a guy who's playing a top six role for the Pittsburgh Penguins. It's really incredible. So if you're looking for an advantage, is there an advantage in goal with Martin Jones versus Matt Murray? You might give the edge slightly to Matt Murray. Martin Jones has more experience in the NHL. Matt Murray's maybe playing better in the Stanley Cup playoffs. But when you're talking about defense, I would probably give the edge to San Jose there, Rich. Yeah. And maybe I'd say the forwards are a wash.
I think Pittsburgh's got better forwards.
And like you said, you give Pittsburgh the edge there. So when you consider that, I think special teams, maybe you give the edge. San Jose's power play has been 30% in the playoffs, so maybe you give them the edge there. But
the best way to stop that power play, simple terms, the simple rationale here, is just you can't take penalties against this team.
You can't take penalties, Rich. And to your point earlier, if Pittsburgh wants to shut down the Hurdle, Thornton, Pavelski line, they've got to possess the puck. And what I thought was very interesting in the Pittsburgh Tampa series is in every single game, Pittsburgh outshot the Tampa Bay Lightning.
Mm-hmm.
And the Tampa Bay Lightning are a good possession team.
Yes.
So to outshoot the Tampa Bay Lightning every single game, Pittsburgh just hemmed Tampa Bay in their zone too much. Tampa Bay was spending way too much time defending. That's what Pittsburgh's good at. That's the main thing that Mike Sullivan changed with the Pittsburgh Penguins.
Attacking.
They attack. They forecheck.
They play with passion now.
Yes. They're not a passive team anymore. And you know, it's I'm going to take San Jose in six.
Okay.
But I don't feel confident at all because I went 0-2 in the conference finals, and I could easily see Sidney Crosby hoisting a second Stanley Cup. So I have no confidence in my pick whatsoever.
What's your overall record?
In the playoffs right now, I went 6-2 in the first round, then I went 2-2 in the second round, and then 0-2 in the conference finals. So basically, everyone who's listening should be listening to your pick, not mine.
Well, no, I'm only one. I'm only 9-5, so I don't know if you'll listen to my pick. I'm taking Pittsburgh in seven. I do think that the San Jose, as I mentioned, has a better defense. I think that Pittsburgh has a better forward group, and I think that Pittsburgh third line. I think San Jose's secondary scoring has been very good. I think guys like Marlowe are not as productive maybe as the name value that they carry. So I think there's going to be a lot of pressure on Logan Couture. I think Pittsburgh's going to be able to outscore San Jose a little bit more. And the speed to be able to offset San Jose's speed and advantage there, I think, is going to be the difference. So I have Pittsburgh in seven. We'll see. One of us will be right. We know that. Never mind the games it's in. One of us is Pittsburgh. One has Pittsburgh, and one has San Jose Sharks. After the break, surprise. At least I was surprised to see Steven Stamkos lace it up for the Bolts in Game 7 against the Penguins. Almost scored coming down that right side there later in the game. Question now is, with him being a pending UFA on July 1st, what is his future? What's in store here? Easy for me to say. For Steven Stamkos' future, does he stay in Tampa? Does he go to the Leafs? Is there a wild card team? Maybe the Habs, another team that gets involved? We'll talk about that after the break.
We'll be right back.
It's the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. TSN1290.ca.
Halfway through the first hour on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show for Saturday, May 28th. Richard Pollock, Ezra Ginsberg, and Rory McGoran here in studio. Before we get to Steven Stamkos, this segment's brought to you by Bell Acres Golf and Country Club and Clear Lake Golf Course. Illegal Curve is thrilled to be presenting the 2016 Bell Acres Pro-Am on Friday, July 8th. Play with a pro and enjoy an incredible day of golf featuring hole prizes, pre- and post-round meals, and post-round live entertainment. For more information, visit bellacres.com.
And Richie, we're going to be golfing next weekend. Me, you, Rory are going to be hitting the links next weekend, so get those sticks ready.
Drew's not coming, right?
No.
Okay, good.
Drew who?
Exactly.
Richie, we actually have four passes.
Do we?
To either Bell Acres or Clear Lake. Head pro Jamie Chapman from Bell Acres dropped off some passes. So we're going to take a caller right now. We're going to give away four passes to either Bell Acres or Clear Lake.
Do you get to choose?
Yes.
Really? Okay.
You do get to choose, so we'll take caller...
Caller 62.
Yeah, we'll take caller 62, because that's what I'm going to shoot on the front nine next weekend. No, but we'll take caller 4 right now, so you'll win four passes to go to either Bell Acres or Clear Lake.
What's the number?
The number is 780-1290.
Easy enough. 780-1290. Fourth caller through gets four passes to either Bell Acres Golf Club or Clear Lake Golf Course. Give it a shout. Rory, we ready and on the line. Steven Stamkos, Ezzy. You know, first of all, how surprised were you that he played?
I was very surprised, Rich. And I'll tell you who was even more surprised. Grapes, if you listen to Coach's Corner.
Wasn't too happy.
Grapes wasn't too happy that Steven Stamkos was playing, and he referenced Eric Lindros, and he was right about Eric Lindros, who actually came back and had a big game, but then the following game got knocked out by Scott Stevens. You, of course, remember that, Richie. But I don't think we expected Steven Stamkos to play at all in the playoffs. And when you're talking about blood clots, that's a serious issue, right?
No kidding.
And all indications were that Steven Stamkos was ready to play, but that the team wasn't sure if they were going to put him in the lineup. They didn't play him in game 5 or 6 when it was fairly certain that he probably could come back. Now, I don't think that him playing has any impact on whether he stays or not. I think that Steven Stamkos wanted to be in that game. I truly believe that. But you have to weigh his health long-term, Rich. And in this particular case, again, I'm not a medical doctor. I didn't even really do well in grade 12 biology. But when you're talking about that type of injury and the stakes, I understand, Rich. It's game 7. Tampa Bay Lightning are trying to get back to the Stanley Cup final, right? I understand why he would play. But he wasn't very effective. And you've watched him in that first period. He looked like, you know, he was a deer caught in headlights. Like, he hadn't played in 2 months, right? Mm-hmm. And he comes back, and you mentioned that he did have a good scoring chance. I think it was the second period of that game, but he wasn't a big factor. And when you talk about Steven Stamkos' future, Rich, we've talked about it for, what, a year now on the show? And I've said that I think there's still a chance that he signs. It doesn't look that promising right now. It looks like he's going to test the free agent market. I thought he might sign during the season. But we do still have a month here before free agency, so he can sign with the Tampa Bay Lightning. They're going to have to give him a lot of money,
though. Wouldn't that have happened by now?
Yes, it would have.
Like, I thought he's gone from the beginning.
Yep.
I think he's going to Toronto. But, I mean, if he doesn't go to Toronto, it's possible he goes. Like, I could see Montreal swooping in. I could see
29 other teams want him.
Wild card swooping in here. If you look at the Tampa Bay Lightning and their free and their roster,
yep,
you have to see who needs to be signed. So they have $52.2 million on the books next year.
Nikita Kucherov.
That's a big one. Kucherov's an RFA. He's 22 years old. Rich, but they also have Nemestikov, Paquette, Ezzy, Killorn, who's always been a great playoff performer.
Yep. I've always liked Killorn,
And then after next season, Johnson and Pilat are up. And then Druin's up after next season. So you have, I mean, there's not enough money to go around, is
Rich,
there?
Is there a better bargain in the NHL this past season than Nikita Kucherov at $700,000?
Probably not.
It's ridiculous that they had him on that contract, entry-level contract.
Those Johnson, but the Johnson-Pilat ones are more impressive to me because they signed them post-entry-level. Entry-level, you're locked into these certain
prices. As a side note, how does Tyler Johnson not make Team USA?
Well, that'll be a topic we're going to discuss later in the show, the World
ridiculous.
Cup rosters. The World Cup of money.
Bring him over to Canada. We'll play him. He's a great player.
Shocking, eh?
And Kessel. Why is Kessel not on that team?
Save it for later in the show. I just think there's not enough money here in Tampa Bay. I mean, unless he's going to take $8 million, for example, why is he going to wait this long? And then, I mean, don't get me wrong. I mean, it's possible he waits it out, sees what's out there, and says, you know what, I'm happy where I am. This is the best team right now that he could probably play on with the cap space.
Yes. And Richie, you mentioned Cedric Paquette, Namestnikov, Killorn, who are due contracts this year. But the ones that I think are the ones that are really going to prevent the Lightning from giving Stamkos $10 million a year are Johnson and Palat after
that's
Kucherov.
Right. Right. Andrew Len, as either way.
Andrew Len. So is there enough money to go around? We know the Chicago Blackhawks, year after year, struggle to keep the core together. It's really a miracle that they're able to keep Taves, Kane, Hossa, mm-hmm. Seabrook, Keith, Crawford all on the same team, right? Because they're all making big money. So I agree with you. It's looking less and less likely that Stamkos stays. He would have probably signed already, even though earlier in the season I thought they might maybe make a move and find a way to trade him. It looked like Drouin was going to be moved earlier in the season, but it's not just Drouin. You have all three triplets who are due for raises, and you have other players that are going to be making more money. You mentioned a guy like Killorn. Killorn, you could argue, is a $5 million a year player.
So his agent was going to argue.
So I don't know how you pay Stamkos $10 million when you're paying six other guys $6 million a year.
And let's be honest, the dollar hurts. It's not where it was before. Where's the new revenue streams aside from increased ticket prices?
Ads on jerseys?
Maybe that's it. Probably, unfortunately. The TV contracts are locked in long-term here. NBC and Rogers. You're not going to change that. So where's the money going to come from?
Unless the Canadian dollar is a serious issue.
Gary Bettman said it cost him about $200 million this year.
Yeah.
The league. So unless the cap goes up, I mean, you got to sign these guys. There's not enough money to go around. Now, you mentioned the Chicago Blackhawks. The problem, and we're going to talk about parity in the next segment, the problem with the salary cap system is it penalizes good management.
It's true.
You bring in a bunch of good players and you have to get rid of them.
You're constantly having to get rid of those players that are in the 25 to 28 year range, mm-hmm. that are due $2 to $3 million pay increases because you have your players coming off of entry level and second contracts, right? Exactly what's happening with the Tampa Bay Lightning. You don't think that Stevie Yzerman wants to sign Steve Stamkos? He can't give him $10 million a year when his salary cap is only $70 million a year.
That's right.
If the salary cap was $80 million a year, okay, maybe you have you have $1.5 million more. Because as you know, Richie, the Tampa Bay Lightning did offer Stamkos 8 years, 8.5. But unfortunately, he wants 10.
And I didn't even mention the other wild card. So just so people are aware, if they haven't looked at the roster, after next, so this upcoming season, they have Johnson and Palat on the books for 3.3 each. They're both RFAs after that, but obviously creeping closer to UFA status, okay? Drouin will also be RFA. So, I mean, conceivably, that could be those could be their three highest scoring players, all up for RFA status. And at that same time, probably the top five defensemen in the league, Victor Hedman, is up for UFA status.
And Craig Button said he believes Victor Hedman should get $9 million a
year. Okay, so you pay Hedman $9 million, which I can totally understand. And you're going to pay Stamkos $9, $10
million. No. You're
gonna
right.
Pay Johnson, Palat, and Drew and what? How are you going to put a roster together?
No. There's not enough money to sign all these players.
Not enough.
So if you decide to sign Stamkos, that means you probably can't sign one of Johnson, Palat, or Kucherov. And right. Those are three excellent players. Can you afford to let those guys walk? Because those guys won't make $10 million a year. Those guys will make probably $5 to $7 million a year, right?
Yeah, Kucherov will be luckier because he's younger than the other two, and then he'll be coming off entry level, more RFA years. Okay, so his contract, the numbers will be less. The right. Other two guys are aging closer to UFA status. They're both 25 years old. And Killorn's 26. So you got to make some hard decisions.
Just as an aside, you know, you forget, Steven Stamkos played the one game, but Tampa Bay almost got to the Stanley Cup Finals without Steven Stamkos.
I know.
This Tampa Bay Lightning team, I think, is still a very good team. On defense, you know, they're aging a little bit with guys like Coburn and Garrison. Still good defensemen, mm-hmm. but, you know, Slater Cuckoo, really good, solid defenseman. I really like him. More of a kind of defensive defenseman, but good skater, can jump up into the play. I really like what the Lightning are doing. Vasilevskiy gives them a young goaltending option.
Which they need, right? Because all these players aren't going to be able to pay Bishop. He's got one more year at 5.9 on his contract.
I think the Lightning are going to be a playoff team in the East for years to come. And the East isn't very strong, Rich.
It is. And that's one of the reasons that they were able to cruise through to the conference finals this year. Playing the Red Wings and the Islanders. You could argue, you know, two teams that were solid but nothing special to get through. And now they took the Pittsburgh Penguins, who beat the Washington Capitals, to seven games.
Yes.
But as you mentioned earlier in the show, Ezzy, they were outshot in every game.
Yep.
Okay.
I think they ran out of gas a little bit. Like the triplets weren't as effective. Kucherov obviously got the big game tying goal there, and he had a good series. And I felt like Vasilevsky looked shaky in net for most of the series. And for a 21-year-old rookie to come in there, I mean, not everybody can do what Matt Murray did, right? Like, for a young goalie to come in, I mean, you think of Patrick Waugh back in the day, Marty Brodeur, young goalies who took their team all the way to the Stanley Cup Finals. Not everybody can do it. I'm not saying that Vasilevsky isn't a good goalie. Yeah. I just thought that Murray, even though Murray wasn't very good and had to be pulled for Fleury earlier in the series, I didn't think Vasilevsky ever looked very confident in net.
See, I think about it in the way that, okay, so Vasilevsky, you know, maybe you say Vasilevsky Murray has more pressure because Fleury's behind him, could take a spot. I think it's actually less pressure. Because if you're Vasilevsky, you feel like the team's chances are sitting on your shoulders because Bishop's out. So if you don't perform well, you really have nobody to go to. Whereas with Murray, you don't perform well, but you still have Fleury.
Yep.
And I think that gives you a little bit of comfort as a team guy that you're not letting your squad down. I think there's a little bit less pressure that way, but I understand, as you mentioned, both guys are really young. I think both guys are going to be the starting netminders for their team in the not-too-distant future.
Well, with Vasilevsky, Rich, speaking of salary cap implications, you have Vasilevsky cheaper, whereas Bishop's making big bucks, right?
That's exactly
Bishop,
right.
I mean, we got to give Bishop credit. He's a Vezina Trophy finalist. He's an excellent goaltender.
It's amazing this
but
year.
Two or three years down the road, if you have Vasilevsky coming up, you're going to be in a situation maybe you look to move Bishop.
You cannot be all these guys you have to sign. I mean, there's not going to be enough money to go around, right? Leave it there, Ezzy. Stamkos will be an ongoing, you know, we're going to be talking about that leading into July 1st. Before we go to break, Paul Lacoste. He's going to be golfing at Bell Acres or Clear Lake.
Awesome. Have a great round, Paul.
He didn't tell us which one, but we'll be in touch. Paul, have a great round, as Ezzy mentioned. When we come back, it's a bit of parity this year, it feels like. Teams, the conference finals, we're going to talk about it. Is that a good or a bad thing? You're listening to the Legal Curve Hockey Show live on TSN 1290.
The Illegal Curve Hockey Show, brought to you by Royal Sports, the city's number one hockey shop, plus so much more, like soccer to snowboard since 1974.
Fourth segment of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Richard Pollock, Ezra Ginsberg, Rory McGoran, here on a kind of a rainy Saturday morning. Chilly Saturday morning. We got spoiled with the long weekend weather now, so we're paying for it for the weekend following. But I figure Ezzy and I will still find a patio to get comfortable at after the show. Before, Ezzy, you get in and talk about great patio weather, or bad patio weather, but us sitting on a patio in any event. This segment's brought to you by Keener Jerseys. Keener Jerseys is known as one of the world's best jersey customizers. If you want awesome jerseys for your rec team, or have a jersey you want customized, visit Keener Jerseys online at KeenerJerseys.com. And, I mean, I can't tell you how many cool jerseys these guys put together. You look at their Twitter feed. Great guys. Go to them. Put a jersey together. If you have a team, give Keener a call. We have to have Keener on. I think the Florida Panthers are unveiling their new jersey in early June, right? So I think we need to get them on to Keener on. To come here and analyze. I mean, when you talk to Keener about jerseys, he breaks it down so specifically. So I want to hear his take on the soon-to-be-released Florida Panthers jerseys, Eddie.
Well, and Keener yesterday tweeted out one of the jerseys that he was working on, and it happens to be, I know, Richie, your favorite jersey of all time, which was the early 80s Oilers Gretzky jersey.
Oh, yeah, I got one of those.
It's the most iconic jersey, I think, ever.
Remember when Kobe wore that to, like, it was a Lakers-Celtics NBA Finals game?
It was amazing. I mean, to me, like, a Gretzky jersey from that era is, it's not just a jersey, it's art.
Yeah.
And I think that's what Keener does. Like, you know me, Rich, I have a good jersey collection. I really like jerseys. I have a University of North Dakota jersey that I'm actually going to take to Keener, and I really like it. I picked it up this year because it doesn't have the nickname on it. It's just University of North Dakota.
Who's going on it? Who's going on the back?
Well, it's got to be Tucker Pullman. Winnipeg like Jets it. Prospect, number
I like
three.
That.
Yeah. So I'm going to put Pullman on the back of that UND jersey. But they do a great job, and especially if you're a rec team looking for customized team jerseys, you go to those guys. They do an awesome job.
That's a good Tucker Pullman.
Yeah.
That's good. I like that. It's a pretty good player. It impressed me this year when I saw him. You know, as maybe it's a, you know, it's anecdotal. You talk to people around on the streets the past, you know, two, 3 weeks. The conference finals, I mean, we're the hardcore hockey fans, right? And hardcore hockey, you know, we obviously do the show. We'll watch every game and all that stuff. Did the Final Four, maybe it's the lack of Canadian teams, or to me it's kind of somewhat of the mediocrity of it all. Did you find this year to be, because we're now in the final, do you find this year to have reached that kind of parity point where you're thinking to yourself, how many great teams are there anymore?
Yeah, and it's a good point, Rich. I think the conference finals were good. I don't think they were the best conference finals I've ever seen. I mean, you had both conference finals going to seven games. So what more can you ask for? And you
but
had,
isn't that parity? In that way.
Sure. But, I mean, for example, if San Jose would have been swept by St. Louis,
right,
you probably would be saying, that wasn't a very good series, right? Like, what we want is exciting hockey.
Like, that wasn't L.A. Chicago 2 years ago.
Well, and that's just it. I mean, L.A. and Chicago, previous to this year, had won the last five Cups, right? And those two teams were the dynastic Western Conference teams, especially Chicago, winning three of the six previous Stanley Cups, right? This year, Chicago is upset by St. Louis, and then St. Louis is it's going to kind of be their year. They were the best remaining team in the Western Conference, right? But then San Jose, it's also a team mm-hmm. where they haven't ever been to the Stanley Cup final. They have something to prove. This year, to me, it's interesting, Rich, because the playoffs as a whole, you've had a lot of overtime games. I think in the second round, it set a record.
By the way, somebody's got to tell the national broadcaster that overtime magic is supposed to be all the old overtime goals from the teams involved in the series, not every overtime goal from this year on replay.
Yeah, exactly. Like, show me, like, David Volek on the New York Islanders.
Yeah.
Or show me Keith Primo.
That's right.
In quintuple overtime.
That's right.
Or is it quadruple overtime?
I think it was quintuple.
Quintuple overtime. Or show me Marty Jelena for the Calgary Flames
Which
scoring
time?
In overtime. Exactly, right? Like, so you look at this year, and Rich, we know that parity has existed in the NHL probably since around the second lockout, 2005, 2006, and it's probably gotten a little bit better with how well Chicago has played and the dynasty that they've mm-hmm. been able to put together. But this year specifically, I think that we've seen the team that puts it all together at the right time is able to win the Stanley Cup, regardless of what your regular season record was. And I think some people think that's a good thing. There's a different winner each year. Look at the NFL, for example, even though the Patriots have won mm-hmm. a lot of Super Bowls. But
yes.
in the NFL, you see 1 year a team comes out of nowhere, and there's a lot of turnover as far as teams. You can be very good 1 year, very bad the next
right.
year, right? And in the NBA, the days of the Chicago Bulls are over, but you have teams like the San Antonio Spurs, the Golden State Warriors,
well,
the Cleveland Cavaliers in the NBA Finals for the second straight year. You have teams that are good year after year. But to me, Rich, the worst thing you want to see is teams be bad for 20 years. Like, I wouldn't want
to... It's like impossible to be bad after that long.
Yes.
It's impossible.
But I think
you have to redistribute the talent because of the cap.
But I think in the 1980s, it was easier than right. in the salary cap era world, right?
To stockpile talent.
See, I you know, there. It's interesting because you watch hockey, and for me, the best hockey games are the close ones, regardless of who's playing. I just want to see a close game. And what you don't see in today's salary cap world is teams whip teams 7-3 on a regular basis. You might see San Jose beat St. Louis 6-3 once
right,
or twice.
One or two games.
But you won't see that in an entire series. It's just too close, and these teams are coached too well for that to happen.
Like, you tell me, like, this is how I kind of will judge the parity. Like, the Winnipeg Jets had a poor year this season, right? I mean, everything went wrong. They weren't as bad as their record was, and there was a bunch of, you know, things you could criticize. But you take a step back, and they get a fresh start, and they're going to be better next year. Now you have the second overall pick, and fortunate to get that, and you're going to be in a pretty good position next year, really going forward. But I watch the playoffs, and I'm thinking to myself, like, how – you play the Jets against San Jose or St. Louis in a seven-game series, and they're going to have a shot. And I feel like years ago, if a non-playoff team put itself up against a conference finalist or a Stanley Cup finalist, there would be no chance. And I feel like that's what it is. I mean, so many of these teams sit at home and say, you know, two, three moves, we're back, we're in this conversation. It's a coin flip. And so I just feel like the parity has reached a point where there's a lack of storyline. I mean, here I know you have the Thornton storyline, don't get
right.
me wrong, but I'm talking like the Golden State Warriors coming in, this dominant team. Look at the Washington Capitals. I mean, this dominant team, and then the team's trying to dethrone them. Here you have the Sharks and the Penguins.
Right, and we talked about the scoring lines. I mean, you have Sidney Crosby.
Right.
And the fact that earlier in the season, people were talking about Sidney Crosby not being a dominant player anymore.
Oh, I know, yeah.
And the Pittsburgh Penguins were in danger of missing the playoffs. So I think the storyline is that the Pittsburgh Penguins and the San Jose Sharks are exactly what you're talking about, are two teams that you didn't expect to be in the Stanley Cup Finals, right? That's a big storyline. But as far as your point, you know, having the dominant teams in the Stanley Cup Finals, a lot of people do like that, especially fans of the Chicago Blackhawks, right?
I think the casual fan probably likes that. Maybe I'm wrong.
No, I think you're right. Because if you're a casual hockey fan, what do you really know about San Jose and Pittsburgh? If you live in those cities, you might know about them, but you know, okay, Pittsburgh's got Sidney Crosby and Evgeny Malkin. Yeah, they're a good team, and then San Jose's got some top players with Joe Thornton and Joe Pavelski and Brent Burns. But
if it's Tampa, San Jose, who's watching that series? I know the hardcore fan
aside from people
it.
In Florida and California.
You know what I mean?
Not many. And I think, Rich, also, there's a couple points here. I think that with no Canadian teams this year, it's kind of thrown everything off, especially up here in Canada, where we're just used to having at least a couple of Canadian teams in the playoffs out of the seven teams. And this year there wasn't any, so it's kind of been a bit of a bizarre year. It hasn't happened since 1970 that there haven't been any Canadian teams, right? So that's one thing. And the other thing is, talking about parity. We're talking about parity now. Well, what happens when Las Vegas and Quebec come into the NHL? Then we're really talking about parity, because then NHL teams that are already squeezed by the salary cap. So you're talking about Tampa Bay. You're talking about LA, Chicago. Philadelphia's had salary cap issues, right? Those teams are now going to lose players to the Las Vegas expansion team, right? So I don't think parity's going anywhere. And
I agree.
As a final point, Gary Bettman wants parity. Mm-hmm. Like, that's what he wants with the salary cap, right? So I think all of the teams are aware of this. I think what it means is it's going to be very hard for the next Chicago to emerge. Like, who, if you look at the teams out there, Rich, who could possibly be the next Chicago? I don't know if there are any teams. Like, Tampa Bay is a good team. We talked about that last segment. I could see Tampa Bay being a playoff team in the Eastern Conference, maybe even getting back to the Stanley Cup Finals like they did last year. But I look at the West and some of the emerging teams like Winnipeg or Calgary or Edmonton, they're going to have good teams. They're going to make the playoffs.
You're going to go through your cycles of like Edmonton, Calgary, Winnipeg going to be good, and LA, Anaheim, these teams are going to fade away.
Yes.
And they're going to see the cycle. And, you know, Phoenix or Arizona is going to be good too. And that's what's going to happen.
Like, I wouldn't expect there to be a repeat Stanley Cup champion anytime soon. I'm not saying that it won't happen in the next 5 to 10 years, but I don't know if we'll see a Chicago type of team win 3 Stanley Cups in a span of 6 years anytime soon.
We want to take a quick break, Roy? Yeah, we'll take a quick break. Pascal Vincent's on the line. We'll come right back and interview Pascal Vincent, the new head coach of the Manitoba Moose.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Drew, Ezra, and Richard return on TSN 1290. TSN1290.ca.
Top of the hour, hour two of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show for Saturday, May 28th. Ezra Ginsburg, Roy McGoran here, Richard Pollock. We're going to be joined on the line right now by Pascal Vincent, new head coach of the Manitoba Moose. Pascal, thanks very much for joining us this morning.
Well, thanks for having me.
You know, the big news yesterday, of course, you're named head coach of the Manitoba Moose. Pascal, for those who don't know, how did this come about?
Well, when I found out that the job was open, I communicated with the management, and I told them that I was interested in the job. And then I had quite a few long conversations with Paul about this, and just to exchange about our ideas and stuff like that. So I on the other side, the management came back to me, and they said they would like to interview me. And we went through the process. Today they announced me this week that they wanted to hire me, so we adjusted the contract yesterday it was announced officially.
Let's go. When you talk about, you know, the interview process, do you think it was a different process because you're already so familiar with the organization than it would have been if you were an external candidate?
Well, I think I've been interviewed for 5 years. Mm-hmm. I've been here. They know my work ethic. They know the way I communicate with the staff and the players. they know me, and I know them. I know their vision. I know what is expected from the coaches, what is expected from the American League people there. And I think I've been interviewed for 5 years, but at the same time, it was a formal, very professional interview with Kevin Cheveldayoff and Craig Heisinger and Larry Simmons. So it was like I said, very professional, and they took their time to make the right decision for what they feel they need to accomplish in the American League. So I feel very, very happy, very privileged, because they know me and they know what I can bring to the table.
Pascal, what was most appealing to you about becoming coach of the Manitoba Moose? Was it the opportunity to coach in a different league? Was it to be a head coach again as opposed to assistant coach? What was it one factor that was the most appealing, or was it several factors?
I think it was the combination of different factors. Being a head coach is one thing. It's obviously it's a different role, but I felt working with Paul and even Cole Noel, two quality people, I felt that especially the last 2 years, I was in my mind, I was still a head coach, and I had the opportunity to be who I wanted to be. I didn't have to play any games. I didn't have to change my vision because I was an assistant coach. Paul Maurice is, I said it yesterday, he's, to me, it was like going to university every day. He's a tremendous coach. He's got unbelievable knowledge about the game, but the way he shares his information, to me, it was an amazing ride, and we became friends over the time, and we share everything about hockey. So it was, to me, getting that knowledge over the last 5 years and having the ability to bring what I know now and my past experience in the, at the junior level, and combining all those years together and being able to bring it to the American League and having our players benefit from that experience, to me was a great opportunity. But another factor, and one of the most important, was I wasn't looking for a job. I'm really happy here in Winnipeg, and I didn't. There's no way I was going anywhere else. Because it's the Moose, because it's in Winnipeg, that was a huge factor too. It's really a unique situation.
Joined by Pascal Vincent, new coach of the Manitoba Moose. Pascal, you talk about your experience in the QMJHL and then being an assistant coach in the NHL. In terms of coaching in the AHL, you know, sometimes it can be a little bit different in terms of, you know, feeding players up to the big club.
Yeah.
Is this a job where you're going to be able to put in a system that you think is suitable to the talent, or is it going to be a system that kind of mirrors the Winnipeg Jets so the adjustment is easier for the players when they go on up?
That's a very good question, and I think our team is the goal of our organization is to win championships, and we're talking about the Winnipeg Jets, and the goal is to win hockey games in order to make the playoffs and put yourself in a position to win the Stanley Cup. That's the goal. So we're gonna use we have the same terms. We're gonna use the same basic systems. We talk hockey all day long, Paul and I. In the summer, every day we sit down and we're at the office and we work and we talk hockey. That's what we do for a living. So we have I have a very good idea of what he's looking for and what we need to do in order to prepare our players to come and help the Winnipeg Jets win hockey game. So when you just put yourself in the position of an American League player, he's been called up to play with the Jets. That's a lot of pressure. You want to perform. Sometimes you don't have a second chance. Sometimes it comes pretty quick, and the first impression is quite important at times. But you want to take away as less issues as possible and in order to have the players perform at the NHL. And we want to make sure that this guy that's going to come up will know exactly what Paul is talking about when he talks about the forecheck or the tracking or the D-zone breakouts or the entries, ozone plays, face-offs. So he doesn't have to worry about that. All he has to do is keep doing what he's doing, but just do it faster because it's going to get faster playing at the NHL level. So, no, I think in order to develop the Winnipeg Jets way of playing, we need to use the same systems, and I truly believe in that. I truly believe that that's how we're going to develop our players and how we're going to find out about who's good at what and how we can make them a specialist in one areas of the game.
Pascal, I imagine you dealt with this a little bit as an assistant coach with the Winnipeg Jets players coming up from the Manitoba Moose but being sent back down. How do you deal with a player who clearly wants to be with the Winnipeg Jets but he's going to be with the Manitoba Moose for a significant part of the season?
Well, how do you deal with a referee making a call that whether it's good or not, whether you believe that it's a good call or a bad call, it doesn't matter. You're going to sit down in that penalty box for 2 minutes. You know, I'd like to be a 6'5" and have hair on my head. You know.
Yeah, me too.
So there are things that we don't control. What a player will control, and we will be. And Paul is extremely straightforward. He says what he has to say to the players, and that there's no games. And I fit the same category. We will be honest. And there's a reason why he's not with the Jets. There's a reason why he's been sent down, or there's a reason why this guy has been called up. There's going to be no games. We all have a job to do, and their job is to become the best player they can become and grow within the organization, within the system, within the philosophy of our team, and we will be honest with them, and that's the only way we will grow. We will, of course, a big part of being a leader is to have the ability to listen, and it's not going to be a one way. Those guys are trying to become National Hockey League players. For most of them, and so it's going to be an exchange. I have the ability to listen. I care about people. I care about the organization. So, what's going to be best for the team first, always, and then try to help the people the best I can and find solutions with them so they can achieve their goals as well.
Pascal, we wanted to ask you, how much Stanley Cup playoffs are you watching? And like, as a coach, as a now a head coach, but previously as an assistant coach, how much are you watching other coaches that are remaining in the playoffs, and are you taking any notes on what they were doing? Like, for example, John Cooper was using 7 defensemen for the Tampa Bay Lightning.
I watch a lot of hockey. I do watch a lot of hockey, and we do. And the next morning we come back and we watch different games. It's amazing now when I started coaching and the difference with today, the technology. Everything, we can have all the games and we can dissect the games. We do watch a lot of games, and if I can't watch it live, there's going to be parts of it that we'll be watching the next day on the computer. So yes, we observe, we study, we look for tendencies, what works, what doesn't work, why does a guy make that kind of decision behind the bench, what's the matchup. So we study every aspect, and we have also now the ability to have analytics, so we can match the numbers and see what's working and what's not, depending on how the teams are built and stuff like that. So it's an amazing. There's so many options, but yes, we do watch a lot of hockey, and yes, I watch the playoffs for sure.
Pascal, we had Claude Noel. We're joined by Pascal Vincent, new head coach of the Manitoba Moose, and we had Claude Noel on earlier in the year, and he spoke highly of you. And we asked him, though, in terms of like critics of his coaching tenure in Winnipeg, and one of the things that people pointed to was the special teams having struggled. And it's hard to judge assistant coaches, Pascal. So yourself and Charlie Huddy have been taken to task by some fans for the struggles of the special teams of the team over the past number of years. What do you say to fans or critics who point to those struggles and question why the team has put up the numbers they have?
Yeah, and we did. We did. You know, when you're passionate about something, and our fans, I'm from Montreal, right? So I know the passion about your hockey team. And here, it's exactly the same. People are passionate about their hockey team, and it comes with the territory. So for them to criticize when something doesn't look good, it's okay, and it should be that way. And I understand that. And I was involved in the power play decisions, totally. And I was part, I'm part of the coaching staff, and I was involved, and we struggled. It was not an easy year on the power play, and it was not an easy year for the players, because you're listening to me, you would understand that we do communicate, and we talk to the players, and we exchange the coaches, and we try to look for solutions, and we try to look for the right way. But the beauty of it, and what is great, and what gives you some hope, is one player or two players or just a twitch here and there. You look at the Anaheim Ducks. They finished 28th last mm-hmm. year on the power play, and this year they finished first. And there's so many examples like that. We know all the power plays. We know everything that they do. We know their breakouts. We know it. And we know where we need to go in order to get better. And sometimes it's just a little change that will make the whole difference. But you know what? I'm in a position, I love what I do for a living, and I love the Winnipeg Jets fan. I love this town, and I wouldn't want it any other way. We struggled, and we did struggle, and that's fine. Our job is to find solutions, and that's what we're working on. And right now, I'll be in a different team, but it doesn't mean that I'm going to stop trying to find solutions to make a part of our game work. And I'm still studying the power play in many ways. So it's that's the beauty of it, and that's coaching at the NHL. It, from one year to the other, you can go from 28th mm-hmm. to first, and it can happen. And the maturity of our players too. You look at our skilled players or power play more specialists, and you look at their age and the progression they had this year. I'm very optimistic about the future, and especially on the special teams.
Final question for you, Pascal. Any timeline for you in terms of rounding out your Moose coaching staff?
No, we're going to be patient. This is an important part of the process, and we're going to be patient about that. I have a lot of trust in Craig Heisinger. We're going to sit down and make a list of people we think we have a vision of what we need in order to improve, help our team, our coaching staff, and what kind of people we're looking for. So but we have time. I'm sorry, it's a longer answer than I wanted.
That's okay.
We have time. We have time, and we're going to take our time to choose the. It's not always about the best people. It's about having the right people around, and we're looking for the right people in order to help our players.
By the way, Pascal, my mom's from Montreal, and Richie's wearing an Expos hat right now. So
really?
Montreal's a fantastic city.
It's a great city, but it's the city of the Montreal Canadiens, and now you know what? I'm a Winnipegger now, and I love Montreal. And it's a big city, but Winnipeg is special. I've been, I don't know if you guys have time, but...
Yeah, go for it, yeah.
Yeah, I've coached in Cape Breton for 9 years, and smaller community, and I feel a big city is great, but you can feel alone in the big city. I feel in Winnipeg, people are trying to help. People are there for each other. People are proud. People will say hi in the street. People will. It's been great. My family and I. My daughter was born in Montreal, but she's 5 years old, and I've been here for 5 years. It's we love Winnipeg, and I can't say enough. Because sometimes you talk to people and they say, really? Yes, we do. It's been great. So love Montreal. Hopefully the Expos will come back.
Yeah.
But right now, it really doesn't matter to me about the Montreal, what's going on in Montreal. I just care about the Manitoba Moose and the Winnipeg Jets.
Well, Moose fans and Jets fans are going to be happy to hear what you just said about the city. And we wish you good luck in your new endeavor, and we'll talk to you down the road.
Thank you, guys.
Right,
thank you very much.
Thank you, Pascal. When we come back, David Backus is our UFA of the week. We're going to break that down. You're listening to the Legal Curve Hockey Show live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Drew, Ezra, and Richard return on TSN 1290. TSN1290.ca.
Second segment of Hour 2 on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. Richard Pollock, Ezra Ginsberg, and Rory McGoran here. If you're just joining us, you missed Pascal Vincent, new coach of the Manitoba Moose, who joined us last segment to talk about the new opportunity that he has. You can download that interview on iTunes or at illegalcurve.com later on this afternoon. You know, really interesting, you know, answers, Ezzy, and fans certainly have to like how forthright he was with his answers, how he didn't, you know, avoided, you know, the questions about the special teams. Always wants to get better, took responsibility, and then of course his passion for the city. I think that'll resonate with the Winnipeg Jets, Manitoba Moose fan base.
Yeah, and Richie, we talked about it during the first hour. There has been a lot of criticism about the Jets power play and the penalty kill, and Pascal Vincent says, you know, he takes responsibility for that. It's his job, along with, well, more so, you know, Paul Maurice's job and the new assistant coach that replaces him. It's their job to improve the power play, because obviously Pascal Vincent's going to be with the Moose now, so yep, he's going to be focusing on the Moose power play. But, you know, again, I go back to his reputation is very good in hockey. And remember when Montreal Canadiens wasn't sure if Michel Therrien was coming back, Pascal Vincent was in the mix for possibly the new coach of the Montreal Canadiens. Not saying that he was going to be named the new coach, but he was in the mix along with guys like Guy Boucher, right? So I think he's done an excellent job with some of the younger players. You know, you look at Scheifele, we talked about, guys like Adam Lowry. You know, he's worked with the forwards more so. And, you know, very well-spoken guy, and I really do believe he was the right hire.
Before we get into David Backus, I should mention this Legal Curve is thrilled to be participating in the Riverview Health Center Foundation Cycle on Life. Join IC on June 5th, I think that's next weekend, in raising money for the Riverview Health Center's Alzheimer's and Dementia Wards by cycling in the event or contributing to Team Illegal Curve. For more information about the Riverview Health Center Foundation Cycle on Life, or to join Team Illegal Curve, visit rhcf.mb.ca.
Now, Richie, I went for a bike ride earlier this week on Tuesday.
Where'd you go?
I actually cycled to my dad's house.
Oh, really? That's a fair distance.
That was about a 20-minute cycle.
The last time you cycled, you just took a picture of a convenience store that you were getting some chips from.
You had to throw me under the bus.
That happened. I'm not making it up.
Well, I was filling up the tires because I hadn't been on the bike for like a year.
And you're filling up on tacos, too.
Exactly. Good one. Yes, so I did take a bike ride to my local convenience store and picked up a delicious bag of Doritos.
I should mention, you know, we played hockey with floor hockey on Thursday night.
Yeah, Richie, you were sniping some goals.
Well,
yes. You know, for people that that don't know Richie, he's about 6'1".
Okay. What am I, standing up in a lineup here?
And Richie has this move that it's kind of like Jaromir Jagr. Like, he'll put his back into you and kind of do, like, he'll kind of spin off.
Well, I was sweating this time, too.
And I'm shorter. I'm 5'9". So, like, it's tough to, like, even in floor hockey, which is obviously very, you know, recreational and just for fun. But Rich has this move, and I can't really do anything. It's like, I feel like I'm Tobias Enstrom versus Corey Perry.
Kobe Perry. So anyhow, so we're at where we go to 7-Eleven after the game, and as he walks in, he gets the dinner of champions, two taquitos.
That's right.
And two vitamin waters. And I mean, I got slurpy, so what am I saying? Like, I can't make fun of Ezzy too much. Except for then we leave 7-Eleven and we're standing outside talking, and some guy walks out and goes, "Did somebody leave their wallet inside?" Ezzy's wallet.
I have. It was very nice of that guy to do that, by yes. the way.
Well, I mean, he looked inside. There was no money.
Yeah. There's never money in that wallet. It's just like two cards. It's like my bank card and my Costco card. But I seem to always leave my wallet places. I get too excited. I get, you know, sidetracked talking to someone and I leave it somewhere. Like,
this is where Rory jumps in and says, "My wallet's gone."
Yeah.
Back to the Seinfeld trivia.
Yeah, exactly.
David Backus is our UFA of the week, guys. And it was an emotional time for David Backus this past week. He's been a lifelong St. Louis Blue. And the heart and soul, really, of that squad. I don't know if people had heard the audio after the game, but we're going to play that right now.
You know what? You see a lot of true character of your guys when they're tested and, you know, binding together like we did against a heck of a Chicago team, and it gets to a game seven, and we come out of there, play a high-flying Dallas team, and goes to a game seven, and we come out of there, and, you know, he'll kill me for telling you the story, but Game five, I'm not feeling well, and Steve Ott brings me something to help me feel better. And knowing that he's a guy coming out of the lineup, if I can play, that's pretty selfless. And that's the kind of guys we have in here. So that, just stories like that, that, you know, guys blocking shots and sacrificing their bodies, it's tough to swallow, but you know that the heart's in here and the abilities in there, we just come up short.
Yeah, obviously emotional reaction by Backus after the loss. And I mean, they get to the conference final. That's the farthest they've gone in his tenure in St. Louis. He's 32 years old, Ezzy, and he's signed. His contract's expiring. He made $4.5 million this year. I don't think there's anybody who would say that David Backus doesn't play hard and has the respect of probably all of his, you know, all of his opponents. Jonathan Toews and him have gone into some legendary battles over the years, but, you know, Toews certainly respects him, and character-wise, he's known to be a very good character player.
How do you not bring a guy like that back?
Well, I guess this is what gets into money again, right? As I mean, $4.5 million. I don't think the money is much of an issue. I mean, they're not exclusive, but the term. I mean, David Backus plays so hard. Can you sign him to more than a 3-year contract?
I think there's a lot of parallels. I said this 3 or 4 months ago prior to Andrew Ladd being traded, but I think there are a lot of parallels between Ladd and David Backus, both captains. Backus is a couple of years older, 1 year older maybe, but kind of similar types of players, similar point totals.
I think Kessler.
Kessler, another guy.
Year younger, but he's signed a big deal, as he, for $6.8 million through 2022. You're David Backus. You're going to take a 3-year deal of 4.5?
That's a good point. And you look at the way Backus played, Richie. You know, it's 7 goals in 20 games for the St. Louis Blues. He had a 20-goal season. Is David Backus on a downtrend of his career? Possibly.
I don't think there's any question.
I don't think David Backus is going to put up better offensive totals than his previous career highs that he set earlier in his career.
I think he's slowed down a little bit, too.
He has, but David Backus, you look at the clutch goals that he got in the playoffs.
He's incredible.
Three game-winning goals in the playoffs. This guy is the heart and soul. And, you know, you don't see hockey players break down very often.
You don't.
But that shows you how much these guys want to win. Because, as you mentioned, Rich, David Backus has never been to a Stanley Cup final, right? This core group of St. Louis Blues has never been to a Stanley Cup final. They've now been to the conference final. But this is a team, when you have guys like Paul Stastny, Alex Steen, Vladimir Tarasenko, Jaden Schwartz, Petrangelo, Bomeister, Shattenkirk, these types of guys. This is a team that thinks and expects to win the Stanley Cup. They were one game away from getting there, and they want to get back there next year. The goaltending was not very good. Brian Elliott struggled in the conference finals. He was very good in the first two rounds, struggled a little bit in the conference finals, but I look at the St. Louis Blues right now. They have a big decision to make with Ken Hitchcock.
Well, let me ask you about Ken Hitchcock quickly. Did you find it weird? I know we got Curtis Pashelka of the San Jose Mercury News coming up in a couple minutes here, Izzy. But before we go to break, did you find it weird that he didn't address the team after the loss?
Yes.
That's weird.
Very weird. And that,
after a season like that?
That makes you think, is he going to be back next year? Like, I think, Richie, you and I would agree that when you're talking about the greatest head coaches in the National Hockey League, you're probably putting Mike Babcock number one. You're putting Joel Quenneville in that conversation. Mm-hmm. You're putting Lindy Ruff in that conversation.
He's probably throwing Pete DeBoer in that conversation,
is he? Pete DeBoer as well. But Ken Hitchcock is, at the very least, the second or third best coach in the NHL. Probably one of the best coaches of all time, I would even say. Up there with Babcock. And this team, though, I mean, you look at some of the players and you know, is a guy like Kevin Shattenkirk going to be moved maybe? I don't think he should be, but...
It's very possible, but how do you not address the team after the game?
Sure, I don't know the answer to that. I don't know why he chose to do that, but if you're Doug Armstrong and you're looking at this team, you're thinking, okay, if I'm going with Ken Hitchcock, you don't bring him back for one more year. Like, if you're going to sign Ken Hitchcock, you got to bring him back for, I think, a minimum 2 years.
But Hitchcock's been on these one-year contracts because he wants to be on them too.
It's possible, yes. And, you know, it's interesting. There are rumors that Kirk Muller might be the new head coach. He was the assistant coach for the last few years.
I just don't know how you don't address it. I mean,
yeah, I don't know.
It's the end of the season. I mean, you've gone through amazing series against Dallas, Chicago, two seven-game series. Took San Jose to six. I mean, you always play the maximum amount of games. You have guys like David Backus crying in the locker room, and you won't even say, at least, you know, good season, guys. You know, I know it's difficult. Yeah. We'll talk to you in a couple days.
It was a tough loss for the Blues. It was certainly a tough loss for Backus. You look at Ken Hitchcock's face, though, when San Jose went up 4-0 in Game 7, you could tell it looked like a guy who felt and he was outcoached by Pete DeBoer.
We'll leave it there. That's interesting. Well, we can ask Curtis Peschelka about that, too, if he thought that Pete DeBoer outcoached Ken Hitchcock. After the break, Curtis Peschelka of the San Jose Mercury News. You're listening to the Legal Curve Hockey Show live on TSN 1290.